This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby 138.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, three Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. My name is Christina McManigal. I'm a retired jockey here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio. I would like to welcome all of our listeners throughout North America listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. Now, a portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And what a great thing. The PDJF provides financial support to riders who have given everything to the sport. And if you would like to show your support, please visit pdjf.org for more information. Now, our guest tonight has an incredible story. A 30-year career that is still going strong. He's ridden all over the world. 21 Graded Stakes victories to his name, 3,088 wins, and over $65 million in earnings. Jockey Francisco Torres, welcome to Jock Talk.
Well, thank you, Christina. Thank you for having me on.
So glad to speak with you tonight, Francisco. And my goodness, you are a busy man, so we really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. You're all over the place. Tell us what you got going on right now.
Well, actually, right now I'm in Indiana. I'm riding today at Indiana. Unfortunately, I'm suspended, as they say here on a racetrack for careless riding. I rode a horse at Churchill the other day that I ended up running second. I was trying too hard to ride to win the race, and I didn't see the horse on the inside of me, and I just tried to keep my horse running, and when I seen the horse on the outside, I kind of angled him out right before the wire, and I didn't see the horse that was on the inside of us, and I bothered him a little bit, and so we reviewed the race the next day, and the stewards, you know, thought that it was careless riding on my part, which, you know, that's the way they called it, but I was just trying too hard to win the race, and so I got penalized, and they suspended me 4 days, actually three, but being that I was on state courses at Arlington Park on Saturday, I chose to take the other day.
Oh.
So that being said and done, I was suspended four racing days at Kentucky at Churchill, so I've already taken two of those days, and right now I'm able to ride it here in Indiana on Tuesday and Wednesday, which I usually do on my days off at Kentucky. I will ride in the dark days there here in Indiana. So being that said and done, I'm still suspended Thursday and Friday of the following week at Kentucky, so I'll be back up Saturday.
Okay. Well, Francisco, I've been there, done that. Unfortunately, that's just part of it. Sometimes you just try too hard, and that's what happens, unfortunately. But as you know, sometimes really the only break you get as a rider is you're either hurt or you're on suspension. So that's never a good thing to have to go through. But fortunately, you were able to ride your stakes at Arlington the other day. Now, Francisco, how we usually begin these shows, you just have an incredible story. How we usually start these out. How did you get involved with the sport? Take us back to when you were a kid and where you grew up and tell us your story.
Wow. We're going to go back a good 35 years. My dad has always been around horses. He rode match races in Mexico when he was a little kid and whatnot. And so when he came to the United States, he was around the racetrack and he'd go and gamble and bet on horses. And when that's what he loved to do. So he got involved on the backside as soon as he got here to the United States. So as far as I can remember, when 3, 4, 5 years old, I would hang around with my dad, come to the races, and so when, the minute I started able to getting on the backside and hanging out with him at the races, I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I remember very young telling my dad that I wanted to be a jockey, and of course, you know, he thought, well, either he's going to be too big or whatnot, but you know, that's what I strive for as a very young age, and forbid, God forbid, that I ended up being a jockey, believe it or not, and it's been a wonderful career. I've had my ups and downs, highs and lows, and you know, some serious spills, but 30-something years, here I am.
There you are, Francisco. And so your dad rode in match races. Did he ever consider, when he moved here, to start riding as a jockey here in the United States?
No, he only exercised horses here when he came. He never thought about riding horses. He, for whatever reason, I think it's his size was going to affect him a lot. And you know, at that age, you know, he's just here in the United States as a student, and he really never thought about riding races. So for that reason, I guess that he never did try to be a jockey here.
All right, but he passed on that passion for the horses to you. And where did you grow up? Was that in Chicago?
We grew up in Chicago. Went to Our Lady of the Angels, a grade school, which has since now burned down and it's not there anymore. Went to grade school at a Catholic school, and then went on to Scherz High School. We went to Scherz High School, and he didn't only pass the love for horses, as we say, on to me. He passed it on to my other two brothers which are in racing as we speak. My brother that follows me, Javier Torres, he's the Kirk Scales at Churchill Downs at Keeneland. And he's been a Kirk Scales man, I think, 12, 13 years already. And then my younger brother, Romero Torres, he's also a valet at Indiana Downs here. He has my tack and he gallops horses. He rode for a number of years but had a serious spill and broke his back. And then he wanted to continue riding, but the doctors told him that if he happened to go down again, it broke his back, he'd be paralyzed. So,
oh my goodness.
You know, that said and done, he handed it to his career.
Right.
But he's still involved in horse racing. He's, like I said, a valet and gets on horses in the morning. You know, it's been a wonderful career for all of us in racing. Racing has been very good to all three of us.
All in the family, Francisco. Now, this is maybe a funny question. I know Javier very well. Wonderful guy. But I think if my brother were a clerk of scales and I was riding, I might be a little nervous going to dinner with him or something, like feel like self-conscious about how much I'm eating. Are you going to make weight? You know, do you ever?
No, it really, weight's never been an issue for me. I've been pretty light all my life. So, really, with him being a Kirk Scales, has never been an issue on my behalf.
Well, that's good. How tall are you, Francisco?
I'm actually pretty tall for ride. I think I'm 5'5".
Oh wow! But you don't have to worry about your weight too much. That's very good. Do you have what would you say your normal diet consists of?
A lot of fruit.
Yeah.
I love to eat a lot of fruit, and a lot of fish, and a lot of fruit.
Sounds like a good way to go.
And I stay pretty busy. So, I mean, there's never been like we all say, the only time off that we get is either we get hurt or suspended. So I'm pretty much on a go 24/7.
Very, very busy. Very busy. Now, growing up in Chicago, what kind of a kid were you? Did you focus on school or were you clearly just centered around the racetrack? Was it a good area you grew up in? Tell us about that.
Well, Chicago's been a great city. I love Chicago. Chicago, I think, is the greatest city in the world. But growing up in the city, there's not much of horse activity to be around. So usually on my summers that we were off, I would either go to the southern Illinois, down by Fairmont Park. I get up to for a trainer named Leroy Hellman a lot, and which I was pretty much got started from. And so at a very young age, 12, 13 years old, I'd go to the farms in, you know, in St. Louis and learn how to gallop and learn about horses. So then when I'd come back from my summer vacations, I'd get back into school, which really I was never really focused on school as much as I was, you know, riding races and riding horses. So I remember getting my license, my riding license, my jockey license, before I even got my driver's license. So, no, school, I would say, was never my main issue. My main issue was always been riding around, being around horses and riding. And here I am.
Here you are. Were you athletic as a kid? Did you play sports in high school?
I played a lot of sports. I wanted to be a professional football player. That's what I think I wanted to be if I didn't was able to ride. But I knew that at a very young age, again, I wanted to ride races and ride horses. And so playing sports, baseball, soccer, or football were secondhand to me. So my goal was to ride races and I'm glad that I chose that career.
Now, you say your brother Ramiro rode races as well before, prior to his accident. Did you both, were you older or younger? Did you both learn at the same time how to ride?
No, I'm quite a few years older than he is. Matter of fact, I remember him wanting to drop out of high school and start riding races. And that's one thing that I've always told him, but my brother said, you guys finish high school first. I said, you know, education is the most important thing. Only because I had went through it. I didn't graduate from high school. I decided to, you know, choose my career, ride races instead of school, which I've always told them that, you know, something happens, like an injury or something, that you guys got something to fall back on. And I'm glad I did. He decided to finish high school. He finished high school and then started riding races. And right now, great, thankfully that he did finish high school.
Right.
He's also working for UPS on his time off, that he's not working in Indiana racing stops, I think, in the middle of November or end of October. So his season is short with horses. And so then now he's got a job with UPS, which is great.
Good thing he listened to your advice, Francisco, you having gone through the exact same thing. And you said you got your jockey's license before you even got your driver's license. So you started out very young. And do you remember when you rode your first race? Do you remember what that was like?
Yes, I do. It was one of those feelings that you really can't describe. You'd actually have to go through it and to experience. But it was one of those feelings of, like, when I actually rode my first Kentucky Derby. I mean, everything was just, you know, just take in a deep breath and enjoy everything, and just nervous. I was a lot nervous too. I remember, but it was an experience that I could never really explain. But what a feeling!
Oh. Were you tired after the race?
No, I'm actually was glad that it was over with, because I had done it, and now it's, you know, we already did it, so let's just move on and
right.
Go on with it.
Got the first one out of the way. What track was that at, Francisco?
That was at Fairmont Park.
Fairmont Park. Were your parents worried when you went to go ride? Were they worried about the dangers involved with the sport, or did they watch? Did they come out to see you ride the first time?
No, actually, what happened was I'd already had gotten hurt. I was riding fair races, and fairs that they hold at little towns where they have races. And so I had ridden three or four races prior to me riding my first race, and I actually had gotten hurt the one time. I had a two-year-old go through the inside rail with me, and we all fell, and unfortunately the horse ended up not making it. And when the horse threw me over the inside rail, they had those train tracks that were a little train with go around riding kids and whatnot, and happened to hit its shoulder first, and it broke my collarbone. Oh. And so when when my brother Javier happened to be with me, he was running to see how serious I was, and everybody was saying he's dead, and they were talking about the horse not making it, and he got all panicked and nervous and scared and seen me lay there. But you know, it was one of my first introductions of the injuries that we sustain as a jockey, and so that usually that them kind of injuries and spills that you endure, you decide you're going to go on with it or not. And so I decided to go on forward in my career, and again, here I am.
Exactly. That didn't stop you, and you got a taste of the dangers involved very early. And so after you rode your first race, did you continue riding the Chicago circuit there for a while?
Actually, that was in the summer. I want to say in '88, I believe. And then I went ahead and moved to Illinois. I rode two or three races there at Hawthorne in the winter and ended up winning my first race on a horse called named What Gust for Mark Hoffman. And then once I started winning races riding in Chicago, I picked up a great agent. His name was Tom Morgan. In the spring of '89, started my career.
Wow. And so the spring of '89 just took off, and you went from Chicago. When did you start moving around to the Midwest circuit, the Kentucky-Indiana circuit?
Well, after a few years, or three years of riding it in Illinois, I had gotten hurt. And so when I did come back off my injury, the season at Illinois was getting ready to end. And so there was an agent. His name was Terry Miller, Scott Miller, his brother, that was there at Hawthorne. And I asked him what he was getting ready to go, what he was going to do for the winter. And he said, nothing really. And I asked him, I said, well, what about, because he's from Kentucky. And I said, well, you want to work for me in Kentucky? He said, sure. So he left to Kentucky, and I followed him. And that started I started winning races there at Turfway Park. And for the next 2 years after Turfway was over, I'd go back to Chicago and do well. And so then when the winter was starting here in Chicago, I'd go back to Kentucky for the winter. Then came the decision whether I stay in Kentucky, because people would ask me, what about staying? And I wouldn't be able to ride. I wasn't riding the horses that I should have, or I thought I should have been riding, only for the same reason that the trainers were thinking that I'd go back to Illinois. So when I decided to stay in Kentucky and let them know that I was staying, then is when I started to pick up those better horses and better outfits. And when I did that, I just stayed here in Kentucky and I've been in Kentucky ever since.
Jockey Francisco Torres joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Francisco, we've been maybe 20 minutes here into the show, and you've already mentioned two injuries. And I know your list of injuries is very long. Tell us what that list is. What is involved with all of your injuries?
Oh, wow. I've had my left clavicle has been broken 8 times, and my right clavicle has been broken 10 times. I've broken numerous ribs, fingers, foot. I've had in a few concussions and whatnot, and had been in some serious spills where, unfortunately, some riders had gone down, went down with me, and hadn't made it. I remember one of my first spills that I really had was an apprentice that rode the race. And you'll probably be very, very well familiar. His name was Rodney Ditkins. Mm-hmm. And he unfortunately didn't make it. Horse that was behind me jumped me, actually, and Rodney fell in front of me, and his own horse stepped on the back of his neck and never made it back to the hospital. And then I was in another spill here, or in Indiana, where Louis Saez is brother
yes.
Went down and he never made it out of the hospital. So, I mean, I've had serious injuries, but again, I'm been blessed and we're still here.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. I can't imagine. I've had several spills during my career, but never one where a rider actually was unfortunately killed during the spill. I can't imagine what that must just be an awful experience, of course, for the family involved, but for you as well, being involved in that. Was that tough to go back and ride after that happened? Both times.
Well, it's been. Let me see. I guess I have to remember that I've also had two broken necks in that list of injuries. But it's been, as far as being tough, and it is for a minute. But once you're back out there again, you kind of have to block that out and go on with it, because if you're out there riding with fear, or you know, is something going to happen to you, and it's never a good thing. Because when you're out there riding a horse, you got to be 110% sharp, and you know, be ready when something happens to either, you know, either protect yourself, protect the horse, or you know, keep yourself safe.
Like you said, you have to block it out. And describe to our audience how you do that, though. I mean, it is just such a dangerous sport that the ambulance follows you around there. How do you block it out? Do you only think about, you know, the good, the highs of winning? What is it you do mentally to block that out?
Well, once he gets in the starting gates, you just block everything out and you get focused on your, you know, getting a good break and go through the race. And then if you like myself, you ride six, seven races a day. You just block that out and move on, because you can't go out there and think something's going to happen to you, and it doesn't, like I said, it never works out. So move on.
That's exactly right, Francisco. And you said that you started riding in Kentucky full-time, and then your business picked up because trainers knew they could rely on you to be there. And so you're riding at Turfway, and then I'm sure you're riding the entire Kentucky circuit. And we talked about the highs and lows involved of your career. And unfortunately, something happened where you were no longer able to ride at Churchill in Kentucky. And tell us what happened there.
Well, unfortunately, I made some bad choices, bad decisions. You know, I was young and stupid. I made I made a lot of bad choices, and those are choices that I have to live with. You know, I got involved with a lot of partying and stuff, and I just let my career really, like I said, bad choices, bad decisions, and actually I got excluded from Churchill Downs in the year 2000. But really, really, I want to say that I really got lucky, because when that happened, I got invited to go ride for the King Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And so with that opportunity happening, I took it, and I was in Saudi Arabia for almost 5 years on and off. I'd come back to the United States maybe twice, you know, see my family and whatnot, and which I loved. I had a great, great time in Saudi Arabia, and it was, I mean, when you get to ride for the King Crown Prince, it's like riding for the president here of the United States. And so I was treated royally and win a lot of races for the King Crown Prince. But I do, like I said, I do have to say that was a real, real turning point in my career. I was able to open my eyes and see what really, if that would have never happened, I would have never been able to provide for my family. And just, again, just making a lot of bad choices and at the same time grateful that I had gotten that opportunity, just because I was able to provide for my family and can keep riding.
And it's so great that you turned something that was initially so bad into something just so good. And do you remember what happened exactly? Was there a phone call from the King of Saudi Arabia? How did you get that opportunity?
Well, my brother was in Dubai at the time of the other big races in Dubai, and there was an agent of the King Crown Prince that would happen to be there. And my brother Romero, that we were talking about, was in Saudi Arabia galloping a horse that was supposed to run in the sprint for Randy Morris. Horse's name was Morlock. And so the agent of the King Crown Prince approached my little brother thinking he was I, and asked, you know, when he started the conversation, well, what are you doing here, Francisco? He said, oh, no, no. He said, you got me mistaken. I'm his little brother. He said, oh, you think that he want to be considered riding, come here riding for the King Crown Prince? He says, well, he said, call him up and ask him. I'm sure he would. So sure enough, I got a phone call a few days later and asked, you know, if I would be interested in coming to ride for him. And of course, I jumped on the opportunity, and it was, we made some contacts and phone calls, and, you know, I decided on what was going to be my fee, and it was all taken care of. And by the end, like I said, end of 2000, I was on my way to Saudi Arabia.
You were heading to Saudi Arabia on a plane after who
on a plane.
Who thought? So really, Francisco, I said during the introduction, of course, you have 3,088 wins. Those are North American wins. How many wins did you get over there?
I believe it was about close to 100.
Wow. So you...
Yeah, which...
So you have many more wins than I initially said.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot, like I said, a lot of those races in Saudi Arabia never counted here in the United States. So, you know, I kind of felt guilty after that. At one side, they had where I had won my 3,000, and I kind of in the back of my head, I said to a few people, I said, I already won my 3,000, you know, a while back, but they never counted them. So I was good with them recognizing that I won my 3,000 here in the United States.
All right, Francisco, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back with jockey Francisco Torres after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Emicio Jaramillo had a dominant week at Gulfstream Park as he extended his lead to 8 wins in the jockey standings. Jaramillo had 5 stakes mounts on Saturday, winning 3 and coming in second in the other 2. Jaramillo finished the week in the money on 66% of his mounts and led North America in wins with 11. Rafael Bejarano continued his consistent form at Santa Anita as he finished in the money on an impressive 86% of his mounts and won the Grade 1 Shoemaker Mile aboard Midnight Storm. Bejarano finished the week second in North America in earnings with the help of 4 wins, 5 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Monmouth Park leading rider Paco Lopez had another great week as he won 43% and finished in the money on 57% of his mounts. For the week, Lopez finished with 9 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third-place finish. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Florent Giroux, took his show on the road as he won 2 stakes at Penn National on Saturday, highlighted by a win in the Penn Mile aboard Catch a Glimpse. The Frenchman followed up his stakes double by returning to Churchill on Sunday and winning 3 out of his 4 mounts. Giroux finished the week with 7 wins, 2 third-place finishes, and led North America in earnings. Still in search of the perfect Father's Day gift? Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, explores everything that goes into winning a race from the rider's perspective. How do jockeys land mounts? How do they plan strategy? What are the jockeys thinking and trying to do as the race unfolds? The book answers those questions and many more. Order by next Monday to guarantee delivery by Father's Day. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Francisco Torres. And Francisco, right before we went to the break, you just revealed that you were offered an opportunity to ride in Saudi Arabia. And that's crazy. And you have to describe that to us, what that experience was like.
Wow, what an experience. Well, anytime you go over to different countries is an experience itself, especially with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has their own rules, own just their own way of doing things, especially the way they live. And so when you go to a different country as Saudi Arabia, you know, you kind of, you learn a lot. You know, you learn a different culture, different language, that's for sure. I've learned to speak Arabic, just a different way of life. They live different, their rules are different, and their food's different, that's for sure.
What was it like when you first went over there? What kind of living quarters did they put you up in? Did you have to find that yourself, or what was it like?
No, they took care of everything. They took care of my living facility, which was great. It was in a Western compound where the Westerners live. Of course, you know, they had war going on. They're always on that defensive side. You know, they don't really want you to mix with anybody over there. So they put you in a Western compound with the rest of the Westerners. You know, either their nurses that live there, nurses or in the service stationed over there, and so they kind of keep you with, like they say, with the Westerners.
So you're pretty much limited to socializing with just the folks there in the Western compound, and that had to be tough given that, like you said, you had to learn a completely new language before you could really, you know, associate with these people, really.
Right. I am Mexican, you come here to the United States, you got to learn how to speak English and learn the customs and, you know, how they live here. So, again, it was just a wonderful experience for me. When everybody knew that I was there working and riding for the King Crown Prince, I was treated royally, and you know, nothing, you know, make sure nothing happened to me and whatnot. And so, and again, when you get to ride for the King Crown Prince, it's again like riding for the president here.
Quite the honor, Francisco. And what was it like riding over there? What was it like riding with all these other different riders? What kind of rules were involved?
The rules and regulations are like they are here in the United States. You know, you ride a clean race. You focus on winning races and whatnot. And again, been riding for the King Crown Prince at the time. He had the best horses there on the ground. So it was pretty much nice to ride for when you're sitting on the best horse and. When you call on them, they respond, and you know, like I said, had the best horses there at the time, so it was pretty fun.
Pretty fun. I think that's an understatement, Francisco. From what it sounds like, what did you have to work horses in the mornings?
I worked very little in the morning. It was usually their training hours start very early just for the because it gets so warm, so hot. Then I'd come out, get maybe two or three horses in the morning, and then they only race 2 days a week, Fridays and Saturdays, or Thursdays and Fridays, which is their weekend. There, Thursdays and Fridays is their weekend, like ours here, Saturday and Sunday.
And those only 2 days a week, that's crazy. And so the races, were there a lot of people there at the races? Were the fields large? What was that like?
And a lot of people showed up. I mean, there was a lot of people that went there for the races. I think that was about the only thing they had to do there. So come race day, it'd get packed. And you know what? What I learned a lot over there is how to be patient, because there was not only 10, 11 horses in the race. There were races where I rode where there was 30-plus horses in the race.
Wow. Got to keep your wits about you riding in a field that large. You have to know exactly where everyone's at all times. That has to be.
Well, they made you aware where you were aware of what was going on and who was around you, because every prince, it's a very competitive sport for those guys there, because, like I said, every prince has three or four horses in a race. So, you know, when they try to block you in, and you really got to know your wits about what's going on there.
And what was the purse structure like? Were the purses comparable to here? What was that like there?
Well, when they contract you to go right in Saudi Arabia, they write you a contract on how much you get paid, only for the simple reason that in Saudi Arabia, there isn't, they don't run for purses like we do here. They run for cars, vehicles, and cups and gold.
Really?
Yes.
So you might.
In Saudi Arabia, there's no gambling. You don't gamble on races. You just, it's more of an entertainment for those guys and a hobby
I guess that so does.
There's no gambling in Saudi Arabia.
Wow, so that's just, it's just fun to them. It's not like here where that's kind of the centerfold of it all is the gambling aspect of it. But they just do it for the fun of it.
That's it.
Wow. And so it's only 2 days a week, so the other 5 days of the week, what did you do?
Laid by the pool and went, you know, when every shot I got, you know, I'd go to was a trainer by the name of Donna Barton's brother, Jerry Barton. Mm-hmm. He was there at the time, and so I kind of hooked up with him, and he'd go swim at the, and think of the river, where they parted the Red Sea, and we did a lot of sightseeing, a lot of wandering around in Saudi Arabia.
You're tempting me, Francisco. I want to look into... Now, okay, that brings me to an interesting question. Were there any female riders over there?
No.
No female riders.
The female... The Arabic people there in Saudi Arabia, they don't... They're not fond of women spoke people. Their women are... They're treated very, very... second-handish, I guess they would say.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Okay, so I guess I won't be able to go over there anyway. But we're talking with Joggy Francisco Torres joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That sounds like an incredible experience, Francisco. How long were you there for?
I was, on and off. I came back in the year 2000, and for the fall, right before Katrina had hit. So that I was almost there 5 years, from 2000 to 2004 and change.
Why did you decide to come back? Was your contract up, or did you just try to give the United States another try?
It's what it was. I decided, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and get an opportunity came up to ride in Louisiana. And so I thought, well, I think it's time to just say come back to the States and... you know, try to get my career going back here. And so I did that, and I came to Louisiana. Unfortunately, when I did get back to Louisiana, in Louisiana, if you got out-of-town tags or whatnot, your out-of-state plates, the the police pull you over and kind of just ask you questions on what are you doing in Louisiana, whatnot. So I did get pulled over. And so when I did get pulled over, I had everything in order. My license and everything was all in order. But the officer that pulled me over said, "Mr. Torres, there's a red, you know, alert button on your name. I got to take you in." So he couldn't tell me what he was taking me in for, but he said INS was looking for me, which is with the immigration people. So when they did lock me up, I waited, I don't know, another week and a half before anybody came to see me with INS. So when they did come in to check on me, they wanted to know what I was doing in Saudi Arabia and why was I going back and forth. And so I had to explain to them everything that I went through with Saudi Arabia. I had to show them proof of the contracts and whatnot. So then when all that was done, as I'm being shipped around all Louisiana, they wanted to see my birth certificate and my marriage license and all that I had been through in the United States. With that said and done, every time in Louisiana, they ship you around the prisons. So as I'm being shipped around, my paperwork is following me. Mm. So needless to say, 4 months after that, my paperwork following me, Katrina hits.
Oh,
so then it shut everything down in Katrina in Louisiana for another 3 months. So I think I was locked up a good 6 months before I was able to get all that straightened out. And once I did that and got out, I started riding in Louisiana.
That is, my jaw just dropped. That's horrible. You didn't even do anything, and they were just wanting all your paperwork and everything. But 6 months go by, and this is after you're sitting by the pool in Saudi Arabia. That, wow.
Yeah. One of my stories that I have had.
That's horrible. Yeah, thank goodness it finally worked out.
Well, once I got it, that and done, I was that taken care of. They said if something would have happened to me while I was incarcerated in Louisiana, that I could have owned Louisiana. But gratefully, right, Nothing happened, and you know, went through it by it, and here we are.
Here we are, Francisco, and I want to bring up Saudi Arabia is not the only place you've ridden internationally, and. And I'll let you take it from there and tell us how you traveled all over the place.
Yes, I went to Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and rode there for about 4 months.
And what was it like? Was that around the same time you were in Saudi Arabia, or was this following that?
No, it was before that. I had gotten a contract to ride for a guy there in Saudi Arabia. In Japan, I took it just because I wanted to go overseas and experience it. And what an experience that was.
Tell us more.
Some wild stuff that you see only on TV and, some heavy hitters and stuff. And what I mean by that is some rough guys that you know deal in the sport and playing the sport.
Right. Any particular stories you can share with us?
Well, you see those mob races, mob movies that you know they're playing cards and they find a guy cheating and they reach up and grab them and put his hands on the table and hit his fingernails with a hammer and just tore out every single fingernail that he had. And I thought, oh my God, what have I got myself into? Just like one of those scenes on movies.
Your story is kind of like a movie, Francisco. You went through that incredible experience riding overseas all over the place and then thrown in prison for this paperwork mix up. And finally you get out. And then you start riding back in Louisiana. And how was the response, your return to the United States?
The response is great. Again, my career's been up and down, but also I've tried to conduct myself as a professional rider, and people really respect that. And so once I got back to Louisiana and started riding, and got a good agent again, started riding races and winning. And of course, everybody wants a winner. So it was back to the United States and back to riding races.
Back.
Speaking about moving, I happened to, even while I was in Louisiana, I had gotten hurt at Oaklawn and was coming back. And I got a, they were starting to film a movie about Ruffian. And yeah. So I auditioned for one of the riders there in Louisiana in the movie for John Jacinto or Braulio Baeza. And so I got Braulio Baeza's part and we started filming.
So you can add movie star to your resume, right, Francisco? Wow.
Slash jockey.
Like I said, they should make a movie out of your life. And what was that experience like, filming on the set of Ruffian?
Oh, it was a wonderful experience. I got to see how they really actually film movies and how they put, you know, they cut scenes and add scenes. It was pretty, it was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of people and got to be in an actor's guild, like we'd say jockey guild here.
That is crazy. And tell us, what was it like filming on set? Were you just strictly involved in the racing scenes or?
Well, like I said, I got to see a lot of the way they film. But yeah, my scene was portraying a jockey that rode, that actually got to ride in the match race between Ruffian and Foolish Pleasure. And also got to meet some wonderful actors. Sam Shepard, I got to hang around with him pretty close.
Yeah.
Made a good friend of him. And a lot of extras, as they call it, a lot of people that sit in and film, sit in pieces of the movie and stuff. But I'd say Sam Shepard was the most coolest guy that I had met there as an actor.
He's a Lexington local around here, Sam Shepard. No,
yeah,
of
he
him.
Knows all season.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Now, during this filming of the movie Ruffian, were you still riding full time, or were you trying to juggle that, go back and forth filming races, riding real races?
No, actually, what happened is, like I said, I had gotten hurt. I had broken my neck at Oaklawn, and I was just coming back, so I really wasn't in the riding. Riding still full time at the time, so I was able to film, be on set 24/7, as they say, and was able to film the movie there with them without any interruptions.
And so that was probably good for your recovery as well, given that you were riding for the film.
Yes, it was. Actually, it was. Actually, I had to go get an okay from. When you got to. Forgive me if I sound like I'm moving, but I'm actually getting ready to go to the jock room here in Indiana.
So. Oh, you are good. No worries, Francisco. You're good. Now, go ahead.
No, I just, it was actually good for my career because I was getting paid while I was doing, really not riding, but I was getting paid for making the movie, so I was having some income coming in. But usually in our profession, if you get hurt and you're not working, you're not getting paid.
You just read my mind. I was just going to say that. That's always nice when you're hurt to have something to bring in income, because we are self-employed contractors. When we're hurt, when we're out, suspended, whatever, we're not making money. So that's a good way to do it. Just become a movie star. Why not? Now, you know enough about this, recovering from injuries. What would you say, just kind of, what's the typical way you go about recovering and coming back? Do you hit the gym really hard? Do you go through a lot of physical therapy? Is there one thing you do that you always go to coming back from an injury?
You know what? I've been real lucky as far as having not going to go through too much physical therapy. I've been pretty fit all my life, and also not being a smoker, I think, also helped. If I don't smoke, my body pretty much stays pretty fit, to be honest with you. And the only times I've endured therapy is when I've had surgery, and that's because you need to you need to have therapy to get yourself, because once you get, when you get cut, your body goes through some serious getting back to its normal self. So yeah, you do need to have some physical therapy. But in all said and done, I mean, I've been real blessed with not really having to go through any of that. So I just again, just grateful that everything that I've gone through, I can look back and say, you know what, I did it, and yeah, I made some bad choices, which that I think helps for my kids, you know, realizing that I've gone through, that they don't need to go through.
Tell us about your kids, Francisco.
Oh, I got four wonderful kids. Matter of fact, I got two daughters and two sons. My two daughters have given me grandkids already.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Matter of fact, I'm standing in front of my grandson right now.
Oh.
Brandon.
Wow.
And now I can't come to the pool because I'm getting ready to go to the jock's room. So I got two grandkids and one on the way. So, and they're a blast. I wouldn't, you know, they say that your grandkids, you have a better and an appreciation for them, and then there's something different about having grandkids that is true. My grandkids are the world to me, especially this big one, Brandon.
That is awesome. Do they watch you ride? Are they fans?
Yeah, they're fans. Well, my grandson's the only one that can right now that can appreciate and realize what his papa does, and so he gets all excited when he's at the races. And right now I have him for the summer, so we're getting acquainted real well.
That's awesome. Joggy Francisco Torres joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Francisco, not a ton of time left. This hour's flown by. We have a few minutes here left, but I want to talk about some of your career highlights. Now, if someone were to make a movie about Francisco Torres, as they should, I've already said that, but who would be some of the main characters, equine? Who would be the best horses you've ridden? Who are they?
Well, it would be the two horses that I've ridden in the Kentucky Derby. One was Rock and Roll for Billy Mott, which led the Derby to about the quarter pole. He's probably one of the best milers that I've ever been on. And the horse that I rode for Danny Hutt, the lady Danny Hutt that trained the horse, which he was my first Derby horse, of course. And I'd say those would be the two best horses that I've ever ridden.
How about
which there's been a lot in my career. I've ridden a lot of good horses and a lot of good fillies, and ridden for a lot of good people. I mean, you name them, I've ridden for them.
How was it riding in your first Derby? That had to be just the best feeling in the world.
You know what? If you're a jockey and you're learning, you're an apprentice and whatnot. That's everybody's dream is to ride a Kentucky Derby, and I was blessed. I want to say I was blessed to ride him twice, but still looking for another one. You never know. That's what we all strive for, is to ride a horse to run the Kentucky Derby.
That's what we're all searching for, right? Do you remember the setup of the race? Do you remember what happened that first time?
Well, the first time I rode a horse that came from left field. So it was more or less, actually, I remember to this day, I had Shane Sellers on Pulpit on the inside of me. And Gary Stevens on the inside of me on Silver Charm, which ended up winning the race, and Pulpit that was with Shane Sellers on the outside of me. And I asked them both. I said, "Well, who's gonna, who's gonna pay the most to get a clean break?" Because I mean, my horse, you break and just kind of let him run his own race. He didn't have any speed. He come from out of it, and so I remember. And like I said, once they all loaded in the gates and they broke, I looked up at the crowd, and all the guys seen, it was overcast, it had been raining, and nothing but flashes in the ground. The ground just vibrated as we're on underneath the first wire there, and what an experience. And the second Derby that I rode, well, I had a horse, Speed Horse. He was fast, and he was in front. He was in front. He ran as far as he could, just as fast as he could. And, again, he couldn't go the distance, but what a great miler that he was.
Wow, that just had to be such a cool experience. What, Francisco, we only have 2 minutes left. Like I said, this time is flying by. But what are the goals you still have for your career?
My goal still is to ride a Kentucky Derby one more time.
One more time. One more time. Or a few more times. Why not? How about real quick, tell us about your first Breeders' Cup start, 2 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I've had some opportunities to ride the Breeders' Cup before, but then again, it was my bad choice, bad decisions. I never got there. But my first Breeders' Cup ride the other day, or it was last year, I believe. And wow, what an experience that was! Again, and then when you ride those kind of races, it's the top of the elite of the horses, elite of the riders. You get all the best riders, all the best horses running and competing against each other. And so when you're sitting in the jock's room with every best rider that's riding in the country, and it's a wonderful experience.
Francisco, I'm going to let you get over to the jocks room. Good luck today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Christina, thank you much. Thank you very much for having me. And anytime I can do anything for you, please feel free to don't hesitate to give me a call.
Thank you, sir. All the best to Francisco Torres. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I am Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.